wonderful journalist and author, Graham Webber, joins me in the studio. He's written an amazing new book called A Wolf Among the Sheep, How God's Prophet the Little Pebble Became a Womanizing Millionaire Cult Leader. Graham joins me in the 2ST UK's Today studio. G'day, Graham.
G'day, Murray. How are you doing?
Well, g'day, mate. You survived the frost this morning, I know?
Yeah, well done, Graham.
Graham, how did your interest in the Little Pebble, the subject matter, start? Did you move down here as a sort of coastal change, a sea change, a few years back?
Yeah, certainly did. And took a change in career. And I started to do a little bit of freelancing for my former employer, Australian Associated Press.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that, I covered a couple of the preliminary hearings in Wollongong. I'd actually covered a few stories on Little Pebble while I was in Sydney at AAP. Didn't take a lot of notice of it, just another routine court story. But stumbled across this and thought, oh, I think there might be a book in this. Mm. And thought I'd cover all the trials and follow it through and see what happens.
Okay, you got interested in the Little Pebble, what is Kambawarra compound. It'd be interesting at this stage, I think, for listeners, many would be aware of the, of course, it's been covered here for years on 2ST, being in the local area, being Kambawarra, Bangalee area. But the Little Pebble started off, came over here in the, early 50s from Lutheran parents and settled in South Australia in the wine-growing region.
That's right. He was born in Germany in 1950. He was born out of wedlock, which was quite a thing, obviously, for that era. So he's come from a fairly dysfunctional family. His stepfather was an alcoholic and violent. They moved out here at Renmark in South Australia in the mid-50s. He stayed there until he was about 13 years old. Moved off to Victoria and then Wollongong.
The parents split up, so the mother took another partner by the name of Cam. That's where the Cam, William Cam, comes from, I take it.
That's correct, yeah. He's left school at about 15, was a delivery boy, worked his way through various banks, first as a bank clerk. Mm. So he's had a financial background, which has come in handy in later years, apparently.
Yeah, we'll get to that part of that. Actually, that's the finance is very interesting. Go on.
Look, during the 70s, he was became involved in Catholic rosary prayer groups. He actually took over the leadership fairly quickly, I'm told. Mm. And these rosary groups were, in fact, what I call the cradle of his cult. He established a personal following. He was telling people what you call apocalyptic teachings. The end of the world was coming. There were new revelations about Bible prophecies, revelations. The world was about to be judged and come to an end. And he found quite a following from those people, some of them. He went over to New York in about 1980 on a couple of occasions, went to an apparition site over there. He was kicked out of there due to allegations of inappropriate behaviour towards young girls. Their mother was a journalist, can you believe it? He's come back to Wollongong, he's out of work, he listens to these tapes of the bogus American seer over and over and over again. It's a do-it-yourself course in how to become a modern-day prophet. Then he announces that he too is a seer. So, and he begins dictating, telling people what to do. Mary says, do this and that. Some people could see that he was a fake, and they abandoned him, but others couldn't. Mm. And he was actually just copying material from other apparition sites. It seemed to matter that he was living in sin in a de facto relationship, or at least that's how the Catholic Church would describe it. But he still ran these Catholic prayer groups because he said God had made a special exception for him.
So, Graham, he drew from the Catholic Church, having had a Catholic upbringing himself, and started off as a prayer group leader, basically, and then surrounded himself, as I can tell, by all these seers or these people who see visions and have been, the future and past interpreted for them, from places like Germany, Holland, the States. He collected them all, and there's still a network of seers in the
there certainly
order
is.
Of St. Charbel.
Yeah, there certainly is, and I think I'm no cult. I don't profess to be a cult expert or anything, but one of the distinguishing features I see is that he's actually, in other cults you tend to have the leader as the sacred vessel of God and knows everything. Mm. He's fostered other people to be seers as well. They're still under him. He's still in complete control, and he encourages all his children are being led to believe that they're seers as well. But there certainly is a global network. He went through a period where he travelled all over the world to different apparition sites, and he would announce that certain seers were united to him, with him, and hundreds at various points in time. And they continue to they all use their divine insight to claim him to be a prophet of God.
What I find amazing is his divine right, in his mind, to run the show. I mean, he seems to have direct contact with the Virgin Mary via these visions, and if people asked a question, they get a reply from the Virgin Mary. The Judge Berman, in his judgment, and one of the sexual assault cases pointed out that he was amazed that if the Virgin Mary and these higher entities were involved, how come they couldn't spell properly? But, you know, through some of the other officers, the female officers and seers, you could ask the Virgin Mary a question and get an answer back via the little pebble.
That's what they believed, yes. Mm.
It was just amazing. I mean, the dissemination of information. The Order of St. Shabel, which he founded at Campbellwarra, off Kaluna Drive, the compound there, was initially a caravan park. It was expanded. I mean, at one stage there was, what, over 200 people there?
About 200, yes.
And various buildings and so forth. That has gone on through the 80s and 90s. You, the financial side of it, you estimate there has been in excess of $4 to $5 million poured into the Little Pebbles funds and coffers.
Yeah, just in terms of donations that have been declared in financial returns to various government departments, such as ASIC, the Australian Securities and Investment Commission, and the New South Wales Department of Fair Trading. That's information I've obtained from...
You put a disclaimer on that too, because there hasn't been tax return lodged for the last few years, not surprisingly, I suppose, because the main man is doing a little stint at Her Majesty's pleasure. I found, Graham, the sexual assault allegations fascinating. The facts are these, I think, well, you could probably describe them for. The Little Pebble is serving a jail term. He won't be out till about 2013.
That's right. The first matter is covered in Chapter 1. This is the story of, let's call her Kylie, that's just a pseudonym. But she was called as a 15-year-old queen when Cam brought down this whole big plan for multiple mystical wives in 1993. Mystical, he said, because there was not supposed to be any sex involved, but that was just another major deception. What you see in this exchange of letters, extraordinary exchange of letters between Cam and this young, vulnerable, very naive girl, is a pedophile at work. And this is fairly typical of his letter writing to other queens and princesses as I've gone through my research. Now, this first chapter is actually posted on the internet on my website for free download. That's www.wolfamongthesheep.com.au, and it can be read by anyone, anywhere in the world.
It's a fascinating website. You've got lots of photos there, too. Yep. You say, in fact, that Kylie, you use a pseudonym there to protect the identities of some of these people, of course. Cam has fathered more than 20 children and duped dozens of women and girls into sexual relations. There are various estimates of 17 or so. Joining his so-called royal house as queens and princesses in this, what you've described as pedophilia.
Mm. And not all queens and princesses did engage in sexual relations.
There have been married women involved as well, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Not just because someone was a queen or princess didn't mean they necessarily succumbed to him, but certainly I'm saying many did. There was a certain technique he used in calling these people through messages, sometimes public messages. I hope people can understand the grooming process at work and the way that he was able to shift this girl, Kylie, for example, from thinking, having this belief and this image, he's a very holy, holy man of God, and he actually, you know, he's actually a sort of a grubby sex-crazed pursuer of this underage girl. She starts out very earnestly. You can see that in the letters. She honestly thinks she's receiving letters and communicating with the Virgin Mary. Mm. But he sexualises her, he misleads her, he sexually abuses her.
And when he finally gets caught, he's then the track is the temerity to try to blame it all on her. This child was the one who started it all, and he was just trying to keep up. When you read the book, you're amazed at how it could happen, especially in the community here. But a lot of the sexual perversions and so forth, the grooming of these young ladies, and I might say you're pains to point out that none of them had babies before they were 16, before the legal age of consent, seem to be, a lot of this grooming seemed to be with the permission and knowledge of their parents and other relatives.
There's a matter that was heard before courts, and that certain people had knowledge of this, that there was routine activities of Cam going away to motels with several or even five or six
in the Wollongong area.
In the Wollongong area, yeah, at a time. You were engaged in sexual activities. The court has heard that these are allegations heard before courts, that other adults were assisting with transport in taking these queens and princesses to be alone with him. Now, I want to point out that the allegations, and we're only talking allegations here, because they weren't carried through to prosecution, full prosecution, but that other adults were helping with transport, and that is in relation to overage girls, not underage. Mm. It's totally fine, according to the law, for Cam to be having sexual relations with 16-year-old girls. It doesn't seem to matter that they might be brainwashed.
Mm. He's been found, well, to put the facts straight, he's been found guilty of 5 counts of sexual intercourse and 1 count of indecency of Olivia Queen, who was aged 14 or 15 when the offences started in the mid-1990s. He was jailed for 5 years with a minimum non-parole term of 3.5 years. There were other cases brought which didn't succeed, and there are other ongoing cases as a result of this too, Graeme. Is that true?
Yeah. There was a second trial that was held in mid-2006. Now, there wasn't a lot of media coverage of that matter for the simple reason that the complainant there chose to exercise her legal right to give evidence in closed court. Now, I challenged that ruling. I didn't actually have a lawyer of my own. I just severed ties with my publisher at that stage. So I stood up in front of Cam and his legal team to make my own application to the district court to let me back in. That didn't exactly happen, but I was given access by the judge to the full transcript and any video recordings I wanted. So, but there wasn't any media there, and that's the point I'm trying to make. And I've had to legally fight my way into there. If people think this book is just full of clippings and snippings, because that's the impression they might get from chapter one, because that story was very widely aired. There is a whole second trial, and only there's only media there at the end of it. There was also another matter. The committal hearing was held in September 2006. There was the most serious allegations were raised by a young woman who alleged that she was sexually abused many times from the age of 11. It was never reported and has never been reported that matter was committed to trial, but it all stopped when the complainant withdrew charges.
Mm. So, Graeme, we might take a break in our interview at the moment, but look, I might invite the public to call in and put you on the spot, put Graeme on the spot this morning. He's a journalist after all. We've had, when I was at the previous station in the Riverina, we used to get, I mean, it's not new to me, because there's a large Italian community there, of Catholic community, we used to get reams and reams and reams of faxes. We used to get 10, 12, 14, I think 18-page faxes weren't uncommon. When I got here in 2000, the same thing. The fax machine would be jammed up with faxes from a little pebble. Mm. He started off on the whole Chappelle Corby incident a few years ago and used to send us, did you receive any of those 10, 12-page faxes from
him? Yeah, I did.
Amazing reading.
Mm. I think he was trying to put the impression across, because at that time most of the Australian public believed that Chappelle Corby was poorly treated, and I think he was trying to put across the idea that he was just like
she was being persecuted, and he was too.
Yes.
All right, well, we'll take a break, and you can give us a call and ask Graeme a question. If you'd like to, he's with me in the studio for a short time longer. 44232999 is the number. I have open line on your coast today on 2SD. Give us a call, we'll put you straight through to Graeme. 44232999, 26 past 9. This is journalist and author Graeme Webber, who's written this amazing book called A Wolf Among the Sheep. It details the how God's prophet, the Little Pebble, became a womanizing millionaire cult leader. Graeme, welcome back. Graeme, we had a question from Jen. She didn't want to go on air from Canberra. We're asking you listeners to call in with their questions just for a brief time while you're still here. But it's 44, the number 232999 there at the moment. Jen asks, if the authorities were aware that the Little Pebble was raking up all these millions and had this cult happening at Canberra, why wasn't something done about it earlier? Well, I wish I could give a good answer to that, but I can't, because I asked that question myself. It seems to me that it was widely known and that Little Pebble was relieving people of their worldly chattels, that people were complaining, there were a lot of media reports, and I think that this passive government regulatory approach has allowed it to be seen as just a civil matter between people and that the state won't get involved. Yeah. I'm puzzled that with so many public complaints about him, that when I look at the a lot of these financial records that I obtained from the government, I've found a number of financial irregularities that haven't been scrutinised. Well, let's get on to finances. Thanks, Jim, for your question. 44232999 if you'd like to ask around the question. You said that the tax return hadn't been lodged since 2005. Initially, the whole thing is set up as a religion and a charity. Of course, the school, which has been disbanded, was attracting funding from state and federal, I believe, or state at least. You claim there's millions of dollars running into it, but Cam realigned the financial setup, probably from his banking experience, to make himself effectively the chairman of the board. So it's a charity, but it's not a charity. All the money, in theory, my reading of the book is, in 2013 when it comes out,
he'd still be a millionaire and it would all legally be his, including the whole compound at Campbell Row and the whole lot. Lock, stock and barrel.
Believe it or not, he's actually privatised a charity. The charity that owned was set up to buy that land out there that I'm told would be worth millions of dollars alone. And that's happened with apparently no challenge, no scrutiny, and I've been trying to work out, is this a legal technicality that's happened here or what?
Have you called for an inquiry into the financial affairs of the Board of St. Charles Hall on deaf ears, basically?
To this point, yes.
Just expand a little bit on that, if you would.
Oh, look, I've called for a parliamentary inquiry because my belief is if you think the bureaucracy has not been doing the job properly, I see little point in complaining to the bureaucracy. You go to the collies and you get them to call the bureaucracy or the regulators to account and give an explanation of has anything gone wrong here and what have they been doing to police this much complained about person and organisation.
All right, 442-322-999. We just had a call there who's dropped out. You can call us with anonymity if you wish to. Graham, have you had people much contact with victims or associates of a little pebble?
Yeah. And I can tell you that there
are a harrowing time for you.
Yeah, there are people just absolutely devastated, and that's the nature of a cult. That people have come out and they realise that they have done things that they didn't want to do, and we're not just talking about submitting to being sexually. They're all sorts of things they never wanted to do, and they're embarrassed. They're ashamed of it.
And now they have to get on with their lives again.
They have to get on their lives, yes, and now they only subjected themselves to it because they believed that they were doing God's will. There's a belief, particularly that he put across, that if you're suffering for God, that's going to bring eternal rewards. So people are suffering, they think, well, that's good, and they believe they're saving souls out of purgatory, and all this so much warped theology that he's put across.
Mm. Finally, the involvement of the Catholic Church. Now, you're pleased to point out that the Catholic Church never actually condoned the little pebble, but they didn't do a lot to stop him either.
Yeah, look, the way I describe that is a lot like, I think, a fireman who goes into a burning building to try and rescue someone there. They come out, unfortunately, empty-handed. It's not through lack of trying, but I think there should be a review what might have been done better. And I am critical of the Catholic Church in that when decrees were made, comments were made about such as for the good of the souls of the people in the cult that they should leave the cult. I don't think spiritual that sort of spiritual trepidation and consequences is appropriate to use for people who are under massive, massive spiritual intimidation.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's effective. I think they could have done a better job in addressing specifically the theological and prophecy flaws in Cairn, rather than just say, we've had canon lawyers look at this, it's not authentic, just trust us, believers. I've said I don't believe anyone has ever left that cult because the local bishop told them to. They left when they acknowledged the truth. And one of my favourite prophecy plots was when, after the September 11, Cairn belatedly went around throwing out all these warnings and wrote to President Bush and all this sort of thing. And he wrote to the Prime Minister of Australia, John Howard, and he told him that there was going to be an attack on the Harbour Bridge and all these sorts of places. And he also said there'd be an attack on the Jervis Bay nuclear reactor.
And Melbourne was going to be snowed under, but the Jervis Bay nuclear reactor was a classic. I mean, he must have been looking for old press clippings to get that, because that was an issue with John Howard in the 60s and 70s.
There wouldn't be many people around Nowra. I'm not a local, and there wouldn't be many people around Nowra. I don't know. That whole process was canned. There is no nuclear reactor. So you can see the quality of his prophecy, and I think those things should have been pointed out.
I like the SARS one, Graham. When the SARS epidemic hit in 2003, because he told us he was going to be the next Pope, which didn't actually happen. When the SARS hit, he came out with a simple herbal remedy, which was going to solve everything.
Yeah, had the world in a panic, but he wasn't worried. It's quite bizarre.
Congratulations. So I hope the next 3 years, or you spent at least 3 years writing this book and researching. It's meticulous, I can tell you that. And there's not a spelling error in it, mate. What is the next 3 years old? Are you going to do something on windsurfing?
Something a little more relaxing.
Graham, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us on your case today.